globalization, to a large extent, is actually removing responsibility from people within their own locality to take care of themselves.
We know that people do not know who rules or why and how he rules. And yet they know that there is a power that certainly rules.
And we travel 1,000 miles in an hour and a half. We have traveled through whole areas of existence which we have not necessarily gained. We will pop into a Hindu village, but we won't know a damn thing about that Hindu village.
If you push that all the way, you see, what it means is that we will increasingly tend to inhabit all of these areas in depth simultaneously.
Južna hemisfera. Usako drugo sredo poročamo o južni polobli. Točno o poldan.
Lep pozdrav, spoštovano poslušalstvo. Poslušate Radio Študent, oddajo Južna hemisfera. Tokrat bomo povedali besedo ali dve več o tankešnji družbeno-politični sliki, ki je v zadnjem času začinjena s protivladnimi protesti.
Kot je znano, na ulica Venezuele že dober mesec vre. Sprvo študentski protesti, ki so v začetka meseca izbruhnili na zahodu države zaradi posilstva študentke, so kmalo prerasli v širše izražene nezadovoljstva z vladavino predsednika Nikolasa Madure, ki je lani nasledil ikono bolivarske revolucije Huga Chaveza. Protesti so se razširili po vsej državi, postali so množični, kmalo pa so jih začeli prevzemati venezuelske opozicijske politične sile. Z izbruhom nasilja, ki je zahtevalo več kot 10 mrtvih, je številčnost protestov upadlo. Toda, da protestniška volja ne pojenja, je na 10.000 demonstrantov dokazalo ta vikend, ko so pohodov praznih loncev, kot so pojmenovali protest, ponovno množično zasedli predstavnico Venezuele Caracas. Dogajanje v Venezueli smo analizirali z mladim dokumentaristom Gregorjem Escobarjem in Giorgio Ciccarellom Marom, profesorjem političnih znanosti, ki se ukvarja s sodobno venezuelsko politično zgodovino. Najprej pa dajemo besedo Escobarju, ki je v venezuelskem dogajanju kritičen do obeh strani. Opoziciji očita, da izražanje nezadovoljstva z Maduro ne izbira institucionalnih poti, oziroma kot jih sami imenuje demokratičnih, saj zasedba ulic z večinsko še vedno čavistični Venezueli, kot jo sam vidi, zam pomeni nujen državljanski konflikt.
Since Chavez died last year, Nicolas Maduro was elected new president by a very thin margin against Capriles. But that results were validated not only by the electoral organization here, but by many world observers. No? But it was a very thin margin, and the opposition leaders tried to establish or tried to say that there were fake results, no? But without any proof about that. So since January, Maduro has made some very unpopular decisions, some related with the economy, the dollars.
Yes.
We have a very strict change control. We don't have we have limited access to dollars. And Maduro has established a very strict normative about that in January, so the discontent was very palpable. But the thing, the mistake the opposition make is that they didn't search for a democratic way of protest, but instead they, well, not all opposition, but a very radical win commanded by Leopoldo López and Maria Corina Machado. They, claim that the students and people from right wing mostly have to take the streets and force Maduro to leave the administration. But the problem is that the majority of Venezuelans are Chavistas, even though that margin is now not so wide, they are still majority. So it's obvious that when you, as an opposition leader, call to your followers to violent protest, it's going to be a clash in the streets. Hmm? So that's what's happening since February 12th. Some days are better than others. There are a death toll right now from both sides, in fact.
V štartu daje skušamo torej pojasniti trenutne razmere po ulicah venezuelskih mest. Podobno vprašanje, na katerega je malo prej odgovarjal Escobar, smo naslovili tudi na Georgia Ciccarella, ki nam bo v naslednji izjavi širše pojasnil trenutno sliko v omenjeni državi.
You do have, you've got exactly that, different wings of this Venezuelan opposition, and we should be careful to understand what they are, because on the one hand it's true that not everyone in the streets is a member of an opposition party. Not everyone in the streets is a far-right activist. But it's pretty clear that the hegemonic force of these forces in the streets is the far right. On the one hand, you've got the street attack squads of the far right, which have been the ones putting up a lot of these guarimbas or these sort of blockades, these burning blockades, which are not peaceful at all. Often these people are often armed, at least with stones, if not Molotovs and guns, but also have, been hanging sort of razor wire near the barricades and purposely looking to cause deaths among Chavista motorcyclists, and this has resulted in some deaths. But at the same time, you've got some maneuvering within the opposition. All of the leaders are what we would consider to be very far to the right, but you had these protests in many ways result from the fact that one group of these leaders has attempted to sort of tack toward the middle because they've realized quite rightly that there is no way to win an election in Venezuela if you can't attract some of the poor and attract some of the Chavistas. This is the Achilles heel of the Venezuelan opposition, and this is why they can never win elections. And so you've had people like Capriles, who is a right-wing, political leader, move toward the middle and move toward a position of not dialogue with the government, but more friendly toward that. Other groups have gone even further to participate in dialogue with the government. But Capriles and some other leaders have critiqued the more radical tactics, whereas other, more extreme leaders now have upheld these tactics. And so you do have a divided opposition. Just today, you had people leaving, some well-known leaders leaving a party, Un Nuevo Tiempo party, because they saw that party as taking a too conciliatory approach to the government. And this is precisely you've got a lot of disintegration in the Venezuelan opposition right now because they're losing this battle. And they began to lose it when it became perfectly clear that they were not the peaceful, student force that they claimed to be in the streets. The first few deaths on February 12th actually came, it seems as though, might have come from the hands of state security forces. And so for a moment, the Venezuelan opposition managed to convince people, especially internationally, that this was just another example of radical students in the streets and a repressive authoritarian government, cracking down on them. But you've seen some of those people who were involved in that shooting arrested, and you've seen most of the violence, especially the deadly violence since then. There have been, something like 20 deaths. After those first couple of deaths, almost all of the rest have been either Chavistas or bystanders who got too close to the barricades, and people who have tried to cross the barricades and were shot and killed or stabbed. Just yesterday, you had Chavista activists and National Guard attempting to clear some of the barricades in a wealthy area of eastern Caracas, and someone, people were pelting them from buildings with stones and bottles, and then finally opened fire and killed, wounding three and killing two.
Gregory Escobar ni prepričan o uspeh protestov in radikalnega pristopa opozicije. Kot primer za to navede primer izpred let, ko je opozicija z zmernejšim pristopom skoraj zmagala na predsedniških volitvah, uspeh pa se je zagotovila na nekaterih lokalnih volitvah. Ob tem dodaja tudi, da radikalni načini izražanja nezadovoljstva in zahtev protestnikov pri tem protestnike niso enotni. Escobar jih razdeli v tri dele.
Comparing to, I don't know, 6 years ago where Chavismo were a devastated majority, they were gaining followers and doing democratically, and they were very close to winning a presidential election. They have won some local government, but the but they still haven't won presidential election since, I don't know, 98, right? But right now, that radical right-wing move that they call La Salida, the exit, that consists in this thing, Guarimba, and, you know, force National Guard to attack, you know, to repress, because, it has divided the opposition, like, in three parts. That the more radical win, commanded by Leopoldo López and Maria Corina Machado, the not so radical, that is led by Capriles Radonski, that was the opposition leader that almost won the presidential election that happened in April, if I recall. And another opposition, even less radical than, doesn't want that problem in the street, that in fact they're calling our constitution.
Are these students the third group, or?
Well, they're perceived as students, but the last time some social organizations, some of them left, some of them right, so I think it's balance. It's a balance study. Like Provea and Human Rights Watch, they said that 75% of the people detained were not students, but they are perceived mediatically as students, because a group of them were university students.
Yo creo que a través de los años
razmišljamo o razlogih za trenutne proteste. Na prvo žogo, podobno kot svetovni mediji, opažamo predvsem primanjkljaj hrane v državi in še vedno precej visoko stopnjo revščine. Le ta samo po sebi vodi v kriminal in nasilje. Za primerjavo, letno naj bi nasilne smrti v Venezueli umrlo kar 25 tisoč ljudi, kar pa je spet ena medijska slika, ki pogosto ni natančna. Venezuelsko gospodarstvo sicer sloni na proizvodnji jekla, aluminija, cementa in avtomobilov, izvažajo pa predvsem riž, koruzo, ribe, sadje, kavo in seveda nafto. Dežela ima namreč največjo zalogo nafte na svetu in kar 2800 sončnih ur letno. Pogoji za mirno in udobno življenje so nekako nastavljeni, a še vedno temu ni tako. Zakaj in kako več o v malce daljšem pogledu pove George Ciccarello.
Those are certainly some of the questions that are motivating the protests, absolutely. But we need to, I think, dig into them a little more deeply. The first is with regard to poverty, is that poverty has actually been dramatically decreased over the past 15 years, cut more than in half. Extreme poverty has been reduced by an even higher percentage. And that's as a result of precisely taking this oil wealth that you mentioned and turning it towards social programs for the poor, for those who were historically left in a great deal of poverty, especially under the neoliberal reforms of the 1990s. So if in the face of that kind of situation in which poverty has actually been dramatically decreased, you have, of course, a political support for the government that has contributed to that reduction. And so poverty hasn't exactly been one of the issues in these protests. And if you look at the statements made by these students, they don't really seem to care much about poverty or equality. Venezuela has become, you know, one of the most equal countries in Latin America just over the past decade and a half. What they're talking about is scarcity, you know, food scarcity, which is we should understand in Venezuela is not a generalized phenomenon in the sense that food is always scarce, but it's an import phenomenon, which is, you know, the result of certain hiccups in the import process and even mistakes by the government and also hoarding by private interests that leads to very specific items being completely off the shelves for a period, and then something else will be completely off the shelves. And that does frustrate a lot of Venezuelans, but the poorest among them, of course, are not in the streets as a result of it. If we're talking about insecurity, which is another concern of the protesters, it's again, there's truth to it in the sense that it's a very dangerous place, especially Caracas. But as you mentioned, the 25,000 murders as a statistic, which has been thrown around by the opposition and by the press, it's actually not a statistic at all. It's a projection by a nonprofit, a non-governmental organization, and the methodology behind that projection is very dubious. And even some opposition analysts have suggested that it dramatically overstates the actual murder rate. Not to say that that's not a bad thing. That the murder rate is not terrible, which it is, but just that this has been used in a very politically motivated way. And the fundamental point, in a lot of senses, is that insecurity was serious, and shortages were around when Maduro was elected in April, and they were both present as well when the Chavistas won elections in December. And so the question to ask is really why at this moment is this occurring?
Okay, I would like to stay here at this problem of criminal and the violence. You mentioned the false methodology of opposition, but also I was wondering myself, interest about this genealogy of violence in Venezuela. How was it before Chavez, and why the criminal, as we hear in media, grown in last 10 years, if that's true? Mm-hmm. Because I was just wondering, maybe it was just hidden from the mass media. It was the mm-hmm. criminal was always there, but it was hidden in the poor districts of the city mm-hmm. or of the state.
Well, that's always the case. And so we should point that out in the sense that, you know, these are middle class students, for the most part, out protesting about insecurity, but it's actually the poor who are losing their lives for the most part every day because of it. So that is an important point. But when you look at the history, it's not that it hasn't gotten worse. It has in some senses. Insecurity and violence and murder rate peaked in many senses in the early 1990s, in the middle of an economic crisis. And, you know, so it was very bad, comparable at least to what Venezuelans are seeing today. But then it did drop dramatically. And the increase, there has been something of a recent increase in the murder rate and in insecurity. And this is a troubling phenomenon. This is a huge problem for the Bolivarian Revolution. And it results from a whole bunch of very difficult factors, one of which is the fact that the police historically were part of the problem. They participated in the vast majority of the violence, and it seems as though, according to some recent data, that that's still the case, even under the Bolivarian police, that they're involved in, you know, drug trafficking sometimes and in the violence directly. The second question, and so, I mean, the difficulty for a revolutionary process, a leftist process, a humanist process, is that it's not politically feasible to resort to a harsh policing measures in an effort to crack down on crime. If this were a dictatorship, of course, it would be very easy to deal with crime, and it would be dealt with violently and bluntly. But, you know, the Chavista government has been trapped in this position of having to deal with very serious questions of violence, but not being able to resort to the violence that that these revolutionaries themselves had historically suffered at the hands of the state. So that's a sort of underlying tension. Now, another huge part of the problem has been the role of Venezuelan prisons. The Venezuelan prison population actually increased dramatically until just a couple of years ago, partly because of tendencies which sought to, you know, take a hard line toward crime and just throw everyone into prison. This is still a very small prison population compared to the United States, for example, but every single person that goes through these prisons essentially becomes integrated into, at least potentially integrated into, mafias and gangs and a whole series of perverse phenomena that then disrupt their ability to reintegrate into society. And the government has taken, you know, good steps toward that in recent years, but it's still a major problem. So it's a very complex problem that needs to be dealt with, and that isn't going to go away by itself, which I think was the error of some of the early years of Chavismo. Is the thought was that if you increase and eliminate poverty, that crime would decrease by itself. And I'm certain that it in some cases did decrease as a result of that, but there have been countervailing tendencies that have seen it increase. One of which, before I forget it, is the increase in sort of mafia activity, some of it from Colombia, moving through Venezuela and taking root, really.
If I remember right, I read about that one of the Chavez reform was also that of the, he established some local militia. So he gives some of the power to the people itself to protect themselves. Is that true? And if it is that in some kind of relation to the situation of the criminal and the violence in Venezuela?
In some senses, that's true. But the reality is that what happened was that these popular militias emerged before Chavez. Historically, because of the dangerous aspects, because of the dangers in Venezuelan barrios, because of the dangers in these poorer areas, you had the emergence of grassroots organizations aimed at providing self-defense. And these organizations have become a major part of the Venezuelan process, and they do play a role in reducing crime in the areas that they have a lot of influence. At the same time, the government has also attempted to deal with this through the official police by refounding a national Bolivarian police force, although this was very late and very recently. So the it's not something that has been able to, have a powerful impact yet. But the new police have an entirely new educational curriculum, a sort of humanistic, socialistic education curriculum, and the structures of their oversight are very different. So the hope is that this will help reduce violence in the long run. But it's good that you bring up these popular militias, because they're very often maligned and criticized in the mainstream media by a sort of hysterical liberalism that fears popular organizations. And they've really become the symbol of fear for the Venezuelan bourgeoisie, that see people on motorcycles with red shirts and dark skin, people who are clearly poor, and they get very afraid. And so they've essentially tried to blame everything on what they're calling the colectivos, which basically just means the revolutionary grassroots organizations of Chavismo. And the reality is that, first of all, the colectivos are not participating in the violence that they themselves are trying to blame on them. Oftentimes it's actually security forces or their own groups, honestly. And so you've got this painting of grassroots organizations as violent, delinquent, thugs, when in reality they are some of the most radical and socialist elements of this political process.
Thank you.
ko razmišljamo o trenutnih situacijah, je včasih pogosto dobro, da sežemo v zgodovino in jo skušamo interpretirati s pomočjo zgodovine. Bolivarska revolucija, kot so svoje boje poimenovali čavisti, je bila poimenovana po Simonu Bolivarju, venezuelskemu revolucionarju z 19. stoletja, ki je vodil latinsko-ameriško borbo za neodvisnost proti španskemu imperiju. Čavistična revolucija iz konca 20. stoletja je prinesla številne reforme, agrarna, šolska, zdravstvena, volilna. George Ceccarello odgovarja, kako stvari glede reform stojijo danes.
If we're speaking about the major aspects of the process, I'd like to, you know, divide them into first the social welfare reforms that constituted the first few years of the process, especially after the oil industry was taken under control again in 2003. You had the explosion of social welfare missions that provided free healthcare, free education, a whole series of work activities, subsidized food, a whole number of things. And this is really when you started to see not only the poverty rate dropping, but also the quality of life of poor Venezuelans increasing dramatically. And on top of the fact that the poverty rate has decreased and that the country's become much more equal, when you add to that the fact that people gain certain benefits in kind, in other words, free healthcare, free education, it's really a dramatic change from two decades ago. On top of that, though, and really the next stage and the sort of important unfinished aspects of the Bolivarian process have to do with popular participation and direct democracy and the institutions like the communal councils, these direct local assemblies that are used to make decisions on a local level. And at this point in the process, there has been an effort to press these forward into the building of communes, these sort of broader conglomerations of councils along with cooperatives, along with peasants working on their land, and to draw these into increasingly large socialist units that will be better able to sort of weather the economic storms of the future.
Ljudsko nezadovoljstvo, ki se je nakopičilo v zadnjem mesecu, so skušale venezuelske oblasti potešiti z nekakšnim mirovnim pogovorom, ki je potekal pretekli teden. Na njem je predsednik Maduro skupaj s tako imenovanimi desnimi lastniki podjetnik, kot vidi Gregorio Escobar, podpornike neoliberalne gospodarske doktrine, odprl nekaj perečih tem. Glavni problem po mnenju Escobarja pa kljub temu ostaja gospodarska odvisnost Venezuele od nafte.
Maduro, like a week ago, he made a peace conference where he invited some entrepreneurs, some people of the biggest enterprises or factories of Venezuela, like they are from right. In Venezuela, there is everything is political. It's political, everything. So when I said to you that they are workers or owners of factories that are from right, is because they openly express. So that peace conversation or peace debate was a success, but we're in a good climate of conversation. So that conversation with right wing owners of factories, that is one of the problems, the economy problem right now. I think we're successful in a way, but I think it's too early to tell, because the biggest problem of one of the things that are unpopular right now with the government is the thing I told you before, that we are oil product place country, base in oil, and we don't have anything much to export, so we import a lot of things, and with this dollar control, so the bolivar, that is our currency, doesn't bleed out, So there has been like a very difficult time for people that import products to have access to dollars. So one of the, I think the bigger point of that meeting, that peace meeting was that duck talk with the owners of importing empress. I don't remember the word right now. The government has been establishing since then a couple of things, like there are new waves to access to dollar in a more honest value.
Ob vseh težavah in dobrih stvareh, ki jih ima Venezuela, so svetovni opinion makeri, kot je New York Times in podobni, proteste označili kot študentski. Študenti so v Venezueli predvsem pripadniki srednje višjega razreda. Govorili smo z njim in kaj kmalo zaznali, da venezuelska mlada elita pogreša predvsem tako imenovane ameriške sanje, pogrešajo Playboy, Mickey Mouse klub in neoliberalizem. Kako to razlaga George Ciccarello Mar, je moč slišati v naslednji izjavi.
Mr. Ciccarello, if we can address just one more point. We talked with some students in Venezuela, in Caracas. They have spoken, when we asked them what is their main objective in these protests, they have spoken to us of freedom. They said that they don't have enough freedom. We noticed in the context of their statements that they have this kind of strong affection towards the United States.
Mm-hmm.
On the other side, I also imagine that the states have a strong affection towards Venezuela's oil reserves.
Of course.
Can you maybe explain for our listeners this connection? Or
sure.
Okay.
Absolutely. I mean, again, the demographic of these protests is largely middle class and upper class. And these are people who are frustrated for a number of reasons, not just because of insecurity and shortages on the shelves, but also because, for example, the government has recently cut back the amount of money that they can buy, the amount of dollars they can buy at an official rate if they want to take a vacation to Miami. And you should have seen the anger that provoked, of course, an anger that only affects the middle classes who travel to Miami anyway. But the reality is that this was used to essentially engage in currency speculation that was driving up the black market rate of the Bolivar. So the government was attempting to deal with that and angered this sort of middle class constituency. And there are a whole number of things like that. And you'll look, if you dig deeply into what it is that they mean by freedom, you'll often find a category of freedom which is very compatible with liberal democracy and the United States influence in the region. And that's why these leaders that are at the front of these protests are really, you know, a faithful representative of a lot of the demands, because when you have middle class students demanding a certain amount of economic privilege that they feel as though they are losing, then especially when they're opposed to an anti-imperialist socialist government, and then they look to the United States, which is a country that many are, you know, attached to for other reasons. They travel there, they have family there. They identify with, you know, U.S.-style liberal democracy, and they think that neoliberal capitalism will save them. And the reality is it may save a few of them, but it would cast Venezuela and especially the poor back into the sort of suffering that was going on in the 1980s.
When we spoke with one of the students, he said that in Venezuela there are not only poor people.
Of course, this is the perspective of a displaced middle class that feels as though it has the right to run a country and has a right to dictate what a society looks like. And the reality is the poor are now driving the process in Venezuela, and that's exactly as it should be. We'll be right back.
Zaenkrat v Venezueli toliko. V nadaljnih odvijanjih bo moč slišati v dnevnih informativnih oddajah na Rešu. Oddaje smo pripravili Nejc, Marko in Gregor, tehniciral pa je Želc. Srečno.
Globalization to a large extent is actually removing responsibility from people within their own locality to take care of themselves.
We know that people do not know who rules or why and how he rules. And yet they know that there is a power that certainly rules.
And we travel 1,000 miles in an hour and a half. We have traveled through whole areas of existence which we have not necessarily gained. We will pop into a Hindu village, but we won't know a damn thing about that Hindu village.
If you push that all the way, you'll see what it means is that we will increasingly tend to inhabit all of these areas in depth simultaneously.
Južna hemisfera. Vsako drugo sredo poročamo o južni polobli. Točno opoldan.